Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schugel.
We are joined again this morning on this Friday morning by Dr. Donald Stern with the Rappahannock Area Health District, the Acting Director. Dr. Stern, good to have you along this morning. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Ted, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Here we go. You look around at the numbers nationwide and in a lot of states with things very high. In this area, the Rappahannock Area Health District, the hospital numbers as of yesterday were just 16, and we seem to be doing well around here, even though there are some raging numbers elsewhere.
Well, you know, actually, our number of new cases seems to be rising right now. New cases of COVID-19 over the last week seem to be rising. And if you look at the percent positivity of testing being done, that's on the increase. We were down to like 3.7% of tests done were positive. It's over 5% now. So that's creeping up. But as you noted, I think it's very interesting that the number of folks in the hospital right now is low, and it's probably lower than it's been for months. So that's kind of encouraging to me, and kind of what I expected if people do what we've asked them to do, and that is the elderly stay home, those with underlying medical conditions stay home, and be mindful of the hygienic measures we've suggested, washing hands, using your mask, cleaning contact surfaces, using hand sanitizer, et cetera, and let other folks go to work, go to school. And so we are seeing, a surge in disease, but it's probably in younger folks, and, you know, we could probably tease the data out and actually support that with the data. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
But so there's lots of disease still out there, and we've talked about this, Ted. We know that that COVID-19 is endemic. That is, it's in our community. It's here to stay. We're going to have to learn how to live with it and how to work with it. But we're going to have a vaccine. I'm pretty confident of that towards the end of this year, early next calendar year. And I think I can encourage folks in these regards as we with more detail about vaccine development, if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll jump right into that then right now, because anytime you can talk about vaccine, that's such good news. And I've seen some stories this week, for the last month or so, you have talked about how there are a couple of really promising trials going on right now.
Yes, sir. So we're seeing a lot of disease right now. We're developing herd immunity, as we say, which develops people's internal defense system, is recognizing this virus, developing immunity against it. But it's really going to take a vaccine to provide a community protection against the spread of disease. So we have to have a substantial number of folks in the community and percentage of the community that is protected against this. And that's going to come with the vaccine. So I've been using the New York Times Vaccine Tracker. Now, that's not my most popular medical journal, but, you know, this is factual information. It's not opinion. This is factual information. And they do a very nice job on tracking the development of vaccines. So they note that there's 155 vaccines now under study. 23 of those vaccines are already in human trial. So what does that mean? The process. Let's talk about the process by which vaccines need to be approved. Now, I'll admit, this is on a fast track. FDA is trying to help these vaccine manufacturers develop this vaccine quickly, but it's not totally avoiding safety. Okay, they still have to go through preclinical testing, which means the vaccine that they develop has to go through animal trials first. Not human trials, but animal trials first to provide some study of safety of the vaccine. Then there's the phase one actual safety trials in which they give the vaccine to a small number of people to test for safety and do some dosage assessment. How much vaccine does it take to stimulate an immune response? Phase two then is hundreds of people then are given the vaccine. And they also, through those trials, look at dosage. What dosage will stimulate an immune response? And how strong is that immune response? So they give the vaccine, and then they, over a period of time, draw blood on folks to determine their immune response. That's what phase two. Then phase three, which some vaccines are now close to phase three, is when the vaccine is given to thousands of people, and we watch for whether those folks get infected with the natural disease or not, as compared to a group of folks who have not received the vaccine. That's what takes so long with these vaccines, is when you start having to involve thousands of people and the time it takes for them to then be exposed to the natural disease to see what their response is, as compared then to a group of folks who've received, this is the placebo vaccine, so it's a blind study to the participant. The researchers know who actually got the vaccine and who got the placebo and look at the results. There's then, of course, the approval process from the FDA after all that data then is collected. Wow. But what is fascinating to me is the number of types of vaccines that are being produced. And this gets somewhat technical. For you and I, it seems fairly easy. Oh, it's a vaccine. It's in a syringe with a needle. You get a, intramuscular injection of this vaccine and you're done. It's very quick, easy. Seems like a very simple technology to prevent disease. Much better than ending up in the hospital and having to be put on a ventilator, I'll tell you. However, the development of this vaccine is fairly technical, and it's really remarkable if you dive down into the science of this, how the science of vaccine development has progressed. No longer scraping a smallpox off a cow and scraping that on a human being to provide exposure as a vaccine.
Yeah.
It's now all done in the laboratory.
Well, and what's fascinating about this, Dr. Stern, is that this all started. I mean, they had this is being a novel virus. They started out with nothing. This and to have gotten to where we are today in really a short amount of time is pretty remarkable.
Well, that's one of the amazing things I think about the genetic research that's been accomplished over the last several decades. They actually had the genetic code of this virus determined within a month after the virus was identified. So understanding the full genetic code in a month really does then help the scientists try to figure out how this virus behaves, what are the proteins that are associated with it, and how we can design a vaccine for those specific proteins so that when the virus enters our body, our natural immune system then says, the vaccine. Okay, the vaccine is given with this foreign protein. Your body recognizes it as a foreign protein and creates an immune response. It's really remarkable work. You've heard about Moderna, which is the one vaccine produced by an American company. This is now in phase one. Results have been reported. The New England Journal of Medicine did have an article about this particular virus. There were 45 folks who went through this early phase one trial and had a reasonable immune response. Of course, the immune response was greater in those individuals that had a higher dose of the vaccine. So how they then ultimately determine what the dosing should be, that'll all be worked out through phase two and phase three trials.
And since you're hopeful that maybe by the end of the year or early next year?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Well, that
we'll have a vaccine campaign like you've never seen before.
I guess I bet. I know what it's like every year with a flu shot, and this will be big, and the distribution, I guess we've talked about before, about just the distribution will be just the massive thing.
Right. There'll be, I'm sure, a major campaign involving both public and private sectors. My guess is, so we've seen no protocol for this yet, but my guess is they'll make sure that the vaccine is available for vaccinators first. So the medical community and first responders will probably get the vaccine first, and then next in line will be the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions. Those folks will be prioritized, not the general public. It will go first to those who suffer from the more severe form of the disease. So the vaccinators first, then those who are at highest risk for severe disease.
And just trying to convince, it will be for some people there will be some convincing, and for others, I've already know people who say I won't get it, but I'll be first in line.
Well, and that's why I think it's helpful, Ted, for you and I to talk about how these vaccines are developed. I mean, people say, oh, how do you know what's in this vaccine? I'm not going to get that vaccine. It's being pushed through, and you don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
Yes, we do know what's in it. There's plenty of literature now being published, and I'll recommend folks go to the vaccine tracker at the New York Times. It's factual information. It's not, you know, opinion of or false news. It's a very good organized summary of the development of these vaccines all around the world.
Dr. Donald Stern here this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We need to take a quick break. We will continue on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We will be right back.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, on with us this morning. Dr. Stern, I'm just back from vacation. That's why I am tanned and rested this morning. But vacations, it was a much different situation this year, because my wife and I, we really at all times in all situations felt like we need to be, you know, on top of this and you know, not let our guard down and not get into hugging and you know, any of that kind of stuff.
Yes, especially with strangers, Ted. I mean, there's some reasonable guidelines on the CDC website about travel. My son and daughter-in-law and seven grandchildren are planning a trip to the West. They love national parks and hiking. And, you know, that's a safe environment to be in. When you start getting into crowds of people, that's when your risk goes up for transmission of disease. Knowing how this disease is transmitted from person to person, by respiratory droplet or by contact surfaces where the virus drops, you get it on your hand, get that on your face, in your mouth, nose, eyes. This is how the disease is transmitted. So being mindful of that, people can use what I call, we've been talking about, reasonable practicality in protecting themselves and still travel. So there's some questions you ought to ask yourself before you travel. Is the place that you're going, is there widespread disease? Is the disease expanding that in that area? It would suggest you may want to take a little bit more caution. Is COVID-19 spreading in your community? That is, does that mean that you may be possibly at higher risk for carrying the disease, COVID-19, where you're going? You want to be mindful of that as well. Are you or those you're traveling with likely to get very ill from COVID-19? So folks with underlying medical conditions may want to be a little bit more careful. And as I've always suggested, elderly folks and those with underlying medical conditions, just stay home, keep your distance, wear your mask, wash your hands frequently, at least for the next 6 months till we have this vaccine, because these are the folks who are more likely to have severe form of the disease. So do you live with someone who's more likely to get very ill from COVID-19? So you need to be careful. Think about those others that you live with, because if you pick up the disease and bring it home, you put others at risk.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things to think about. You know, there's other guidance on the CDC website in regards to travel.
And again, it really is just smart, and you do have to think in a lot of different situations of where, because there still are places where you'll be touching screens and doing some of those sorts of things. And as you have told us for months now, have some hand sanitizer with you, or have the wipes available, and just be mindful of that.
Yeah, that's correct. So let me ask you, Ted, do you know where COVID-19 is really expanding in Virginia right now?
Hampton Roads, isn't it?
That's right. And what's right there?
Virginia Beach.
The beaches.
The beaches, yeah.
And what's been going on?
A lot of people congregating.
A lot of people going to the beach. A lot of people congregating. A lot more opportunity for the virus to transmit from person to person. So, you know, one of our hypotheses about the expansion in the eastern area has to do with this increased vacation, increased exposure. We just recommend people be mindful and use caution. Enjoy your vacation, but just continue to keep your social distancing, wear your mask when you're amongst other people, wash your hands frequently, use your hand sanitizer.
And I guess in that light, too, if you are going to the beach and say you go to a beach and you look that it's crowded, find somewhere else. Do some
exactly.
other activity.
Sure.
And go back later.
Yes, right.
Again, it's a lot of common sense. It is a lot of common sense, but you do have to, I think, always be on guard and always thinking about these things.
Well, today, that's true. You know, and for six more months, Ted, people just need to ride this out. We've got to be mindful, keep it in our head that this is something we've got to be careful of. And maybe, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't care if I get the disease. I'm young. I'm healthy. What difference does it make? The difference it makes is that you could transmit that disease to other people who might have the more severe form of the disease, your grandmother, your grandfather, your elderly uncle. Your sibling who has an underlying medical condition. So part of this effort is to protect others, not just myself.
Well, and we have talked before, and a lot of times, because I still hear this argument, and I still see it out on social media of, you know, it's only the flu. And it's not only the flu. That's the problem. And you've talked about in the early days of this disease, walking through the unit at with Mary Washington Healthcare and how serious COVID-19 can be.
This is not the flu. This is a very different disease. Though the mortality rates are low, those people who get the severe form of this disease can be very, very ill and succumb to this disease. So we need to be careful.
Yeah, no, it's out there, and it's like you say, it's endemic, and it's going to be here. But there are things, and as we continue to talk about, that we can live with it, and it's doing all of those things that we talked about, the washing of hands and such.
Think about the flu, Ted. You know, the flu. American citizens have been exposed to flu ever since the beginning of this country. I mean, we've had flu. We've had flu vaccines now for decades. So there's a major difference between flu and COVID-19. With flu, much of the population already has some exposure to flu and some immunity against these different flu viruses, whether that's influenza A or influenza B. Now, we know that there are unique or novel flu viruses that pop up every once in a while, like H1N1. If you remember that, we had a major vaccine campaign at that time. Fortunately, this was not a severe form of flu. Nobody was around. Well, there's very few people who were around in 1918. That was a bad flu. And we have seen some severe forms of the flu. About every 10 years, a new virus will show up and cause a severe outbreak. But for the most part, most of the population has some immunity. Also for flu, we have a treatment for it. We have an antiviral drug that's fairly beneficial for flu, not only to treat it, but also to prevent flu disease. And the other major thing, weapon we have against flu is a vaccine.
Yep.
We don't have that right now for COVID-19. There's some major differences. We don't have natural immunity against COVID-19. We don't have a really good treatment for COVID-19, though there's some progress being made in this area. And we don't have a vaccine yet. So it is very different from the flu.
How important is it going to be, Dr. Stern, to get a flu shot this year? And will there be an emphasis on in the next few months? Get a flu shot.
Oh, yeah. The flu campaign this year will be the same as in past years. Folks want a flu vaccine, and I highly recommend that. It will be available. We are starting to plan our flu campaign now, and we expect to have reasonable shipments and availability of flu vaccine this year. And, you know, you can get it at any pharmacy, and your primary care provider will be glad to give you your flu vaccine.
I'll be in line right away for that also. Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director of the Rappahannock Area Health District here this morning. We need to take a quick break. We will return on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:31.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern here this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, as we continue our Friday discussions with COVID-19 and how it's impacting the community around here. Dr. Stern, schools are making decisions on how they're going to go back. I know the health department has been the local health department really involved with school districts, just in that watching as school boards make decisions, your recommendations come up quite frequently. So you have been involved, I know, right from the beginning, right? Seemed like just even before school, the last school system, before the last school year ended, you already were talking with local school districts.
Oh, yes. We've been working with the schools for almost 2 or 3 months now in trying to prepare a set of recommendations, which we did finalize about a month ago. Applying the principle of reasonable practicality along with the science and the CDC guidelines. Actually, we were about done with our recommendations when the Department of Education came out with their 132-page guidelines. But basically all that was 132 pages of questions. I did not find them really helpful from a communicable disease prevention point of view. Understanding how this disease is transmitted, working with an ad hoc group of school representatives from the five school districts and some private schools, we developed our set of recommendations. So I will tell you, schools are showing a lot of careful consideration as they make these decisions about reopening. And we've been working with them and answering their questions and providing public health advice. But Ted, my strongest advice right now is to parents with children with underlying medical conditions to keep them out of school for right now, at least the next 6 months. These are the children that are most likely to have a severe form of the disease. So why would you want to take somebody who's at risk for a severe form of disease and put them inside a building with a bunch of other kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is going to be COVID-19 there. There are going to be children who have COVID-19 disease. But for the most part, children handle this very well. Children have the lowest mortality rate of any age group. In fact, it's almost immeasurable. And those kids who suffer the more severe form of disease are those who have underlying medical conditions. So I thought we ought to talk about maybe a little bit more detail of what the CDC research has found. Are those kids, what underlying medical conditions are we talking about here that really put kids at risk? So if I may, let's just talk about those a little while, okay?
Yeah.
So kids with severe heart conditions. Now, the CDC list of these, don't break it down by age group, okay? So it's mostly when they talk about heart conditions, serious heart conditions, they're talking about folks who have congestive heart failure or serious cardiovascular disease, and that's usually elderly and not young folks. So it does not list kids who have most of what we think about when children with heart disease are those who've had some cardiac abnormality at birth. Those kids they're not listed as being strongly at risk. But kids who have chronic kidney disease and, interestingly, obesity with a body mass index of over 30, these kids are at risk. Children with sickle cell disease. Sickle cell can minimize the oxygen carrying capacity of the blood. These children are also more at risk for COVID-19, having a severe form of COVID-19 disease. Individuals who've undergone transplant and children with type 2 diabetes. Now, what CDC, what the Centers for Disease Control has done is they've continue to update their website, adding the research and data that's been collected in these regards. So those conditions I've just listed are those that have strong evidence that these are individuals, including children, who may be at risk for having a more severe form of the disease. And then they scale it. They have a set of recommendations where the evidence is somewhat mixed. In regards to a severe form of disease. But there's some evidence, at least, that suggests that these children, and I'm going to list them, may also be at risk for severe form of disease. Asthma, children with severe asthma, children with hypertension, pregnancy, that's been on the list. I'm surprised that the evidence is mixed. Now, what this means, Ted, is they're trying to be research and data driven. It doesn't mean that pregnancy is any less risk than that first list of folks I mentioned, mm-hmm. but the evidence is somewhat mixed. So it's on that list. And when we talk about evidence, that means research, where they've looked at large groups of pregnant women and determined whether they have increased risk or not. Smokers, you and I have talked about that before. They're on the higher risk group. Those with immune compromised disease or an immune suppression drugs. These are the group of children and adults who are otherwise in a higher risk group, though the evidence is somewhat mixed. And, you know, then there's a group of higher risk that fall into a group with less evidence for that risk status. Children with HIV, metabolic disorders, chronic lung disease, chronic liver disease, type 1 diabetes. Now, why would type 1 diabetes fall down the list versus type 2?
Yeah.
And my guess is, I don't know, and I haven't dived into the literature on this, but kids with type 1 diabetes tend to be much more careful with controlling their disease because they've had it, mm-hmm. you know, their entire life, and they're managed well. They're usually plugged into an endocrinologist as well as a primary care provider, and they're managing the disease well. Folks with type 2 diabetes may not know they even have it and are generally those who have less control of their disease. And that probably lends to a higher risk status for COVID-19.
That list that you just gave is interesting because we've never gotten into it that deep. And as you talk about some of those things, you know, obesity or others, some of those jumped right out that you might not normally think of that, but maybe for the next 6 months, like you say, you do need to think about that.
Right. And this isn't picking on children because they may be obese. I'm talking about what the literature shows. Okay,
yeah.
This is what research, and we've got some pretty good evidence now with the number of cases we've had in America, in Europe, and in China, and now India. I'm not real sure of the quality of the data and research that's coming out of India right now, but, you know, India is having a substantial spread of disease right now.
Hmm. Well, you have talked about this, and and especially now when parents need to start making decisions, it's so easy to say, well, you know, overall kids aren't as affected by this, and they aren't. But then when you start talking about the underlying conditions and looking at your own family and considering those underlying conditions, you do need to take a close look at this.
Yeah, this is you implied one of the more difficult questions, and that is looking at your own living situation,
yeah.
And who else is at home. What if grandma and granddad or an elderly uncle who has some underlying medical condition is living at home and you've got school-age children? Should I send my children to school?
Hmm.
Well, you know, that's a tough one because those elderly, especially elderly with underlying medical conditions, who are most at risk for the disease. So if your children are going to school, pick up the virus, could bring it home. I'm not trying to frighten people here. I'm just saying that there's a higher risk for disease in that household and in that group. And if folks are exercising good precautions, as we've discussed, parents teaching their children before school ever starts how to put on a mask, making sure they know how to wash their hands and that they wash their hands frequently, understand the concept of social distancing, they can remarkably reduce their risk. These measures work when they're employed with integrity and discipline. They work. And that's why I'm comfortable with advising schools to open up. You social distance. You encourage everybody to wear masks. You wash hands frequently. You screen children before and faculty before they come into the building. You know, these are measures that work, that help to prevent spread of disease, and we'll make it. We'll get through this next 6 months, Ted. yeah, we'll be fine.
Well, and I guess the other thing is parents now need to start talking to their, and especially young children, about how school is going to be different. You know, you're not going to be, you know, recess is going to be different. Lunch is going to be different. Everything, with whether it's, you know, whether it's wearing masks, social distancing, this is going to be a much different school year. And especially for younger kids, start talking about this kind of thing.
That's right. Parents should not depend on the schools to be the only educator for how to prevent disease. Parents can really help by starting that process now, making sure that they're educating their children. It's their response. Their children's health is their responsibility. So they should be taking the responsibility to teach their children how to properly mask, how to wash their hands, how to properly social distance. This is what we ought to be doing as parents now, before school opens.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Masks continue to be, I don't know why they're so controversial, but they continue to be controversial. And people just unfortunately still aren't wearing them like they should.
You're right. We're, you know, the governor has been very serious about the phase three requirements, part of which is still masking. And we're now, as a health department, required to enforce these open Virginia rules, which include businesses requiring employees to wear masks and their customers to wear masks inside the building. Well, we're getting more complaints about this than anything else right now. And my staff are having to make calls to these folks and say, listen, you know, just put on a mask. This is a reasonable measure to take to prevent spread of disease right now. So we're going through that educational process again with many businesses right now. Masks do make a difference. We're seeing more compelling evidence that masks do make a big difference in controlling for the spread of disease. There was a report that came out of Missouri about two hairstylists who unknowingly had COVID-19 disease. And while they had COVID-19 disease, they served 139 clients.
Ah.
So you think about how close you are. Well, these hairstylists wore their masks. None of those contacts have yet developed COVID-19.
Isn't that fascinating?
That's a small example, but masks can be effective in preventing transmission of disease from the person infected to others who might be at risk for disease. So put on your mask. Let's at least do it for the next 6 months. You know, it seems easy enough to do.
Right. And I mean, I know it's going to be a really hot weekend this weekend, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, we're all doing it, and we'll get through it. But like you said, and you have said from the start, you're not wearing the mask for you. You're wearing the mask to protect others, and that's why that story you just told is a great example of that.
Right. So, for example, when I go out in the morning, I always put I have my mask on my neck like a necktie, and so I'm going to Lowe's and I'm in my work pants and my work shirt, I've got a tie on. I call a mask. Now, I don't have it on my face till I walk in the store. I put it, and then I slip it over my nose and my mouth, and that provides protection to others in the store from me if I have the disease. That's simple enough to do. It's showing concern and care for others. It's a reasonable measure, and it does prevent those respiratory droplets from going a distance, entering the air in a higher fashion. Yeah, it's not 100% proof, but it really does mark down or reduce the amount of respiratory droplets that are leaving you and entering the air and going to others.
I've only ever seen you in a shirt and a dress shirt and a tie. I'm trying to picture you going into Lowe's with just a t-shirt and jeans. I'm trying to get that picture in my mind, and I don't have it yet.
Oh, and I have this beautiful blue mask that was made by one of the members of our church, who at church she you know, we're doing outside services. So first outside service, she brings this box of masks that she made and sets them in the middle of the parking lot and invites everybody to come get a mask. So I have this beautiful blue mask.
That well, we will in future weeks have to talk about that because a lot of churches are outside right now. But when the weather starts getting colder, we're going to have, and if we're still in the same state we are right now, we're going to have some people are going to have some decisions to make, and that will be for another week and another discussion. But you know, like you say, a lot of things can go on outside, but You're safer outside, but keep that mask on when you're around people.
That's correct. That's the key. When you start approaching other people, put it on your face.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We will revive our community. We'll talk about that and conclude on when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We've covered a lot of ground this morning. Yesterday, and over at Spotswood Baptist Church in Spotsylvania, you had another one of the drive up testing things. Those have been interesting to me, just in that really the numbers, the positive numbers that you've gotten out of all of those drive through situations have been fairly low.
Oh, very low. Yeah, I'm impressed as well. From Caroline County to the city of Fredericksburg to this one. Well, we haven't had results from our event in Spotsylvania County. That was done yesterday.
Yeah.
276 folks came and got tested. But the we're getting very, very small numbers of positives found through these tests. So, you know, I'm not finding it as being a means for finding disease and trying to prevent spread of disease. I'm finding it more as just us being responsive to community interest and making sure that folks who want to get testing have access to that. There are folks in town. I believe there's one CVS in town that's now providing free testing. The community health center provides testing. There may be others who will provide low cost or no cost testing as well. So, the testing is readily available. We are going to continue to provide, these kind of community-based events though for testing, probably for the next 6 months.
Okay. And as each one is announced, you'll see it on our Facebook page and website, and we will talk about all of those. So over the last few weeks, we've talked about just kind of reviving our community, and there are ways to do it. You've talked about how we're not going to box, we can't box this in, but there are things that we can do that can keep our family safe and can keep the community safe, Dr. Stern.
Right. So let's, you know, my light at the end of the tunnel is this vaccine that we're going to have access to probably at the end of this calendar year, or the beginning of next calendar year. So let's look forward to that and promote that and encourage folks to get this vaccine. In the meantime, we just need to kind of ride it out. So when I talk about revive the community, it starts with the R, ride it out. Just we've got to learn how to live with this COVID-19 and work with it. It is endemic, with meaning that it's in our community, it's here to stay. We just need to figure out how to work with it, and the vaccine is going to be the major solution, I think, within the next 6 months. V is vaccine campaign then. We're going to have a major vaccine campaign like you've never seen before. We're going to immunize folks. That's I for immunize, focusing on those who are most at risk through this major vaccine campaign, and that everybody can participate. Everybody can participate in preventing the spread of disease now. And everybody can participate in the vaccine campaign that we're looking forward to at the end of this year. So that's how we revive our community and look forward to the next year.
And like you said, you started the show and told us about this, and I'm gonna check it out right after this show. The New York Times vaccine tracker, as this takes place and continues on, that's a good thing to watch, and we'll make that available. The New York Times vaccine trackers, which you had recommended earlier.
Very good, Ted. Well, thank you very much. Sure, appreciate the time and the time to speak to my patient, which is the community at large, as we promote health and prevent spread of disease.
Thank you to you and all the workers with the Rappahannock Area Health District, because just a great service you're providing, and for you each Friday to talk to us. Thank you, Dr. Stern. Stay safe, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Ted. You too.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District here. We will see you Monday morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Stay cool, stay safe this weekend.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.